short thing this morning, although with me, you know, it's never really short. My voice seems to be going here. So let's just hopefully we can get through that this morning. I never liked this thing. When you have a small head, the thing doesn't really fit well when it's very, very small. Is that good? The last time I had it up, I always look at my kids because there's one Sunday that I spoke, and they only told me after that the thing was actually pointing out that way the whole time. So that's probably why you were smiling as I was preaching the last time. So, it was interesting this week. We weren't quite sure if he was going to be able to go up the whole time. And then we were texting back and forth. And then on Thursday, got the text that, yep, he's raring to go and he's able to go and it's all going to be great. So then I was sitting there trying to figure out, okay, as I usually do, what in the world am I going to talk on? And, you know, the Lord's just been impressing on my heart just about leading a life that is pleasing to Him and just kind of like practical Christianity. But I was really struggling sort of with what I should come up with and what I should talk about. And I was going back and forth and then I always joke sort of saying, well, I can get testimonies. We can always have someone give a testimony because people love testimonies. Well, then it was such a short time. And so I jokingly asked Anastasia, what do you think I should talk on? Without hesitation, patience, Daddy. Okay, so that'll be the next time. I won't really talk on patience, but I guess I have my work cut out for me. I know what I need to learn and to preach on next time. So then it just dawned on me of, why don't I give my testimony? I think I've been here since 1991 is when I came to the church. And I've never given my testimony. So that's what I'm going to do this morning for a bit. I'm just going to give my testimony. So I was born very young. Very, very young. Anybody know what year I was born in? No, that's when I moved here. 91. That'd be awesome. Hold on. If I'm 91, that's 20. I got an 18-year-old daughter. That might be a bit difficult. 69. I'm a 60s baby. That's right. Just by a few months. Just by 10 months. I was born February 12th, 1969, on an island called Guadeloupe. Anybody know where Guadeloupe is? Anybody ever heard of Guadeloupe? Jane, where's Guadeloupe?
I didn't put my hand up to answer
that. Oh, okay. Oh, you've heard of it. Gary, you know everything. Where's Guadeloupe? Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah, it's in the Caribbean. It's not too far from Haiti. My parents were actually missionaries. They spent 25 years in Guadeloupe as church planters. And so I was born just the last part of their ministry there. I only stayed in Guadeloupe for 3.5 years. So I actually, one of my dreams I want to do is to go back and visit because I remember nothing. Like there is absolutely nothing that I can in my mind remember about Guadeloupe. And then it's always bad when you watch those TV shows, you know, because they say, oh, if you can't remember a certain period of your life, it's because something bad happened and you blocked it out. So I don't know if something bad happened in Guadeloupe or not, but my parents moved 18 times in 25 years there. It's a small island, but they moved 18 times. And the way they dealt sometimes with missionaries back then is very different than now. And they would just say, Dave Mitten, we feel your ministry is done on this part of the island. You're going to move to this part in a month. So moving became very much part of their life, and moving for us and for myself became a huge part of my life. So grew up there, and then at the age of around 4, I moved to Newmarket. My parents came back and didn't know what God wanted them to do, and so they moved back to Newmarket, and I lived there for 4 years. Now I am the youngest of 5, I'm the 5th sibling, right, so I have 4 siblings. My mother has always says that I was loved, but that I just wasn't planned. And she's okay with admitting that. I am 7 years, is there 7 years between me and my next brother? So then it's 7 years, 10 years, 11, and 12 years. So my mom had 3 kids within 3.5 years, then waited, and then there's little old me. So I kind of had, I was a kid growing up with siblings, but then not really with siblings, because just picture when you're 4, 5, maybe even 6 or 7, you want to play with your brothers. You want to go out and do stuff with them. Well, they're 14, right? They're 14, 17, 18. So I didn't really have a lot of interaction with them, but I was a shy kid. I know it's hard to imagine, but God's kind of used different people in my life, and it's amazing sometimes when I look at how God transforms people. I was a lot like my dad, who for 25 years in Guadeloupe and then another 10 years in other countries was a missionary doing church planting. But my dad was extremely shy. He would actually be at the point where if he was walking down the street and he saw a friend from school, like a friend, he would cross to the other side just because he didn't want to be with them. And I was the same way. I was extremely, extremely shy if I didn't know anybody. And I hated going into new situations. Now, I was also mischievous. If you look at my report cards from kindergarten, grade 1, and grade 2, there was a theme there. Once I got to know people, Stephen in the first term is very good, very quiet, almost too shy. By the last term, we are having a hard time keeping Stephen from talking. He needs to work on that. Kim always laughs because I forget what grade it was. It wasn't grade 3, was it? No, hopefully grade 2. My accomplishment in that term was that I could draw a straight line. That was it. So being arty, I was not an art person. I was very much into I love to play. I was a typical boy. I love to just play games and go out and do sports. But yeah, I was very, very shy. I think a lot of it had to do with the moving part. And I was I would always get worried about stuff. I was a worrywart. When I was younger, I think, my brothers being older than they are, had me believe that I was adopted. So for the longest time, I thought I was adopted. I can still remember at around 6 years old, I witnessed an accident. And the police came and talked to me. And what kind of car was it? What color? And I can vividly remember at night going to bed and the one that's 10 years older than me saying, they're in the mob. The next door neighbor's in the mob. And when they find out that you told the police the accident, they're going to kidnap you. So I don't even think you'll be here tomorrow morning. Wow, goodness gracious, try to be a 6-year-old. I tried to stay awake as long as I could. My eyes and I literally thought for weeks that I was going to get kidnapped. So where I am today and why I'm like I am today, you can blame them. That's why. But God was always a part of our lives, obviously being missionaries. We went to church every Sunday at Sunday schools, sometimes in the afternoon, Sunday night. But the one thing that I loved is that my parents had people over all the time. And I think it's one of those lost things that we have now. We had missionaries and people from our church coming to our house all the time. I can still remember at 7 years old the different people that were coming to our house and the stories they would say about God, about how God, they didn't have any money and God provided money, or certain situations where God answered their prayers. But we also had times where, we heard that people didn't always turn out the way they wanted. But for me, growing up in the church was always, it was a huge part. And I loved it. I loved going to the kids' groups. I loved going to Sunday school. And after church on Sundays, they used to have coffee and stuff. It was actually downstairs at Grace Church, Newmarket. And they had sugar cubes. And the goal of every, at least boy in our Sunday school class, was to get there first and almost empty out the sugar cubes. And just eat as many as you could. But I specifically remember my parents, something's changed a bit in the way that they were talking and the way that they were dealing with us. And it was shortly after that that they came and said, we are going to move. And I remember I was just so mad. I had just gotten to get to know some of the friends. I was 7.5. And they said, we're moving. So I'm like, okay, are we moving from Newmarket to Aurora to wherever? And they said, we're going to Reunion. How many have heard of Reunion? Do you know where it is? It's in the world, yes. Indian Ocean, that's right. Anybody know where Madagascar is? Right, so if you look at the map there, you got Africa, then that little island over there is Madagascar. If you go a bit south to the east, no, that's west. Yeah, to the west. No, hold on. Whatever that way is, everything for me is north. There you go. It's east. That's right. It's this tiny little island. And so I was devastated. And then my parents said to me, oh, by the way, it's a French country. Well, I knew absolutely no French. And my parents had grown up for like 20 years. They were missionaries. And it's funny, back then, my parents went overseas as missionaries knowing almost no French. It's weird how they do things back then. And they said, learn it there. So for the first 3 years of my dad's being a missionary, he said, I made so many mistakes in French, and he learned the language. But so I was the same. So we got on this plane, and we flew to New York. I remember we went to Africa, and I just remember, so I'm 7 years old, and, you know, the planes back then had no movies. And then we ended up in Zaire, and Zaire had a coup just when we arrived. And it's funny what you say in your mind. I remember we were at the airport. We couldn't leave the airport. So my dad ordered 4 Cokes. So one of the things that my parents, the hardship now that I'm a parent, it would have been, is they left their 17, 18, and 19-year-old children in Toronto or in Newmarket. So they stayed. So only myself, who was 7 and a half, and then my brother, who was 14, went with us. Well, my dad paid. We got these Cokes. And then all of a sudden, the guy came to pay, and then we had to pay. And then they said, oh, you got to get on your plane because they're leaving. And back then, right, if you didn't get on the plane, like, you're stuck. They don't do the checking like they do now. And I vividly remember these guards coming in with machine guns and saying, you haven't paid the guy yet. You need to pay. And my dad's like, I paid him. I paid the waiter. And then the real waiter came in. And it wasn't him. Well, I'm looking at these guys with machine guns. They probably weren't going to shoot us, right? But in my mind, I am just picturing, we're dead. We are dead meat. And I'm starting to bawl. And now I know what it's like when you're a father and you're trying to deal with something and you've got a little kid that is just hysterical and bawling. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Luckily, they didn't know. They just knew French, so... Ended up being that they found the guy running on the tarmac, the guy that stole the money. So we barely made it on that plane. And to this day, I still say my dad should contact Coca-Cola, that we should make a commercial. And that we should, I think that'd be a great commercial. So we arrive in Reunion, and we're there for 2.5 years in total. That was a time for me that I really started to get my anxiety. Really was higher and higher. So I had to go to school without knowing French. My parents just sent me off to school. I had to sit there, not understanding a word of anything. And I would bawl. I would cry. I would cry. They would send me home. I ran home twice, thinking I'm going to get love from my parents. Nope. Got a little spanking, got sent back to school. And that was a hard 2 years of my life. I remember specifically just thinking, like, why are we here? And, you know, at 8 years old, my relationship with God really wasn't that great, right? I didn't really pray to God that much. Again, the family dynamic, we were very involved. We prayed as a family. But for me, my relationship wasn't there. And I became terrified. I could not go to any sleepovers. I could not be separated literally almost from my parents for more than a couple of hours. Kids were being sent off to camp and loving it. My parents would send me off to camp and I would hate it. I would make up that I had some disease to the people at the camp, that I needed to go home, and I would be bawling my eyes out. I finally did learn French, And surprisingly, after the 2 years, I lost my English. So because there's no English people on the island, so I just knew French and French only. It was a beautiful island. I really didn't, in the end, probably with the last year, I really enjoyed myself. Not the first year and a half, but the last year. We had a volcano erupt on the island. That was so, you know, for a kid, that was so cool. We went and walked on lava, cold lava. Now, my dad, being like me, there was a sign that said, do not cross, but we did. And we're walking on this lava and thinking, it's kind of soggy, like it's weird. It's just, it's warmish, but it's, you know. And then all of a sudden, we look and there's a massive hole and there's lava flowing underneath. And then we hear this guy screaming at us, right? Probably calling us idiots or something, get over here. But we know we had fun beaches. I spent Christmas at the beach every year. It was awesome. Getting to enjoy my time there. And guess what? My parents say, we're heading back to Newmarket. I'm like, I was happy to see my family, but I didn't know English. So I had to come back to Newmarket and relearn English again. And again, that whole thing. Okay, so I'm 9 and a half years old. My parents send me out to play hockey. They buy me like the cheapest pair of skates. I think they were even goalie skates. They were horrible. And I can't skate, right? And these 9-year-olds are going by me. And it was, again, so I kind of went back into this reverting into this having tons of anxiety and just hating it there. Like, why in the world are my parents moving all the time? And that was at Newmarket. And I do remember being sent, my parents sent me to camp again every year. And every year I hated it. And then I became a bit of a hypochondriac. I would watch a TV show, and anything that was on that TV show, I had. So I was dying of cancer. I had my backbone was crooked, and I was going to die. I watched the Terry Fox story, and I remember feeling a bump on my leg the next day. And I swear, I told my mom, like, you're going to have to take me to the hospital. They're going to have to amputate. I just worried about everything. And my brothers didn't help. I broke my arm. I broke too many bones in my life playing sports. I broke my arm. My oldest brother, again, and naively I believe them, said if you have to stay overnight, it's because they're going to have to amputate your arm. So I'm in a Newmarket hospital, and I heard the doctor talking to my mom saying, not knowing it was because it was busy, but saying, I think we're going to have to keep him overnight because we're just so busy. Of course, I heard that, and I'm like almost trying to run out of the hospital, and they're chasing me. So fear was always a huge part of my life, when I was getting into the teen years. And it was really one worker at Grace Church that I remember just sort of saying, you know, when you're afraid, you should really try to pray to God. You know, see if that works. Just pray. Get your mind off your fears. Get your mind off being worried about things. You know, you try it as a kid, and it still didn't work. You think you were okay till somebody else would say, hey, Steve, do you hit your head? You have a bump on your head. Boom. I got a brain hemorrhage, and I'm going to die again. So I became more and more shy. And I remember my parents just wondering, you know, on the one side with the friends that I had, I was just the goofiest kid. I pulled pranks. I did everything like that. But on the social side of actually having to meet new people, having to interact with people I don't know, I was just terrible. It reminds me of some, you know, I now have one in Timothy a little bit, right? Timothy at times, for me, reminds me a lot of myself, right? For him going up to this weekend is actually, that's pretty big. He doesn't like going away to camp. He hates camp. And so it's weird how your personalities, right, go down into your kids. So again, same typical story. Get to know people. Finally get to learn English. People still made fun of my accent. I still had a bit of a French accent. Got involved at Grace Church. Had a huge preteen group of about 30 kids back then, And then again, there was something going on with my parents. And I just remember thinking, they're having too many closed door discussions. This isn't good. This is not good. Yep. We're moving to Montreal. So I'm 13 at this point. Moving to Montreal. Oh, and going into high school. So in Montreal, high school starts in grade 7. So it's grade 7 right up to grade 11. So I just finished grade 6. And again, I was just devastated. I bawled the whole trip going from Newmarket to Montreal. I remember that. I just hated it. The good thing that God, I think, spared me was that I never actually got mad at God. But I was really mad at my parents. I mean, every time I get comfortable and I finally get the friends and I know the language, I'm the top athlete where I was, you know, I was able to get to that point and that was huge for me. Boom, I got to move. So we moved and we moved in August and then all my family was gone, right? So, you know, so I was 13, so my brother was 20, the other ones were in their mid-20s, they were already getting married and off, so it was just me. That was it, in this horrible place called Verdun, and they jokingly called it Verdump, because it really was. It was one of the worst parts of Montreal. It was awful. And we get stuck in this house with three older cranky ladies up top. They lived on the top floor and we rented. And if you by accident left the door open or kept your bike out in front, I mean, they just complained and complained. And it was terrible. I go to school for the first day at school. They put everybody in the assembly. There's like 200 new students. One by one, they call out the names and then you go with your homeroom teacher. One kid sitting in the auditorium. I'm looking around. Excuse me? Do you have Steve Midden on your list? No, we don't. Oh, that's it. So I'm embarrassed at this point because I start bawling again. I mean, I don't like this school. And then I find out later that this school is not notorious for academics. It's more notorious for sports, which I like. But it's a rough school. So I'm this little short, grade 7, no friends, no nothing. And yeah, the first couple of weeks were really, really tough. But it's interesting, God placed us in this small church in Onward Gospel in Verdun. No youth, almost no young adults, and there's one guy, Brian Johnson, who's in his, at that point would have been his late 20s to early 30s, so I'm 13. And he became one of the most important guys in my life that God placed in my life. He is the one that really kept me in church. He was the one. It's kind of odd now, okay? So if I'm honest, if we start thinking, okay, I'm letting my 13-year-old son continuously hang out with this like 32-year-old guy who's not married, doesn't have, you know, but he was just a godsend. And he bought me we went to movies. He just tried as much as possible to almost become like his family. And he really encouraged me to read God's word. He was the guy who would pray every time that we would almost leave. You know, he'd drop me off and say, you know what? 10-second prayer. Let's just go. Let's just pray. Dear God, thank you for the great time we had tonight. And little by little, he made me more comfortable. And he was the one that really got me involved in Christian Service Brigade. So I am still scared as can be. I am nervous. I had a lot of horrible nervous habits. I didn't get along with a lot of people in high school. I was that kind of kid until grade 10 where I got into track and I was really good at it. Then my life changed. Then I became like this popular guy. But 7, 8, 9, it was really rough. But it was really him helping me be involved in the church. And he made me be a leader in Christian Service Brigade. So it was the first time that he said, why don't you lead some kids? So I reluctantly led some kids. Then I became what they call the sergeant. Then I became the lieutenant. Then I became a captain. And then it just moved on and on. And I loved it. I loved actually serving in that way. And then as I progressed in high school, the church asked me, we need a youth leader. Would you like to actually be involved? And I think one of the things I learned from my parents is always trying to be involved in God's work. Even through those times where I was very nervous and very shy, if somebody was there with me and wanted me to help them do something, then I would, right? I would actually be involved. And so I learned a bit of leadership skills. I worked at Sun Life for about 4 years after high school, and in June of 91, got laid off. Small business benefits, no companies were doing benefits hardly anymore. So I got laid off, so that's June of 91. In July of 91, my parents come to me and say, guess what? We are moving. Hey, at least I got, 7.5 years or so in Montreal. Yes. So it wasn't 3 years or 2 years. They moved. They worked at a Christian bookstore, and they're moving here to work a bit and retire. Actually, they moved here to work at Mitchell's Family Books. Oh, no, another bookstore. And the day they moved, they found out that that small bookstore closed. So my parents moved here and had no job. But again, I wasn't as devastated, but it was a restart, wasn't it? I had to restart. I had to come and learn and make new friends again. So I'm less shy, but I still have my fears. I still have a bit more anxiety. But at least my faith is stronger, right? At least that's good. We move here, and we looked for churches all around. My parents were looking for a good church that had good community, good groups that we could join. I wasn't looking for that. I was going to different churches for one reason only. I was looking for a woman. That was it. I was 21, and I'm like, if I'm going to go to a church, I'm going to a church where there's girls. So went around, went to Parkway, went to a few others, and then came to Bridal Town, and this woman saw me, and she was just head over heels and ran towards me and gave me a hug, and I wish, yeah. No, so we moved. So we came to Bridal Town in September of 1991, and again, it was a hard transition. I had no job. I decided in the summer before that I had lots of money at that time in the bank from working, but I had the best summer of my life. I traveled, I went on trips. My parents were very upset that when I moved here, I literally had like $30 in my account. So at that time, I spent about $4,000 in the summer just doing all the fun stuff that I could. So they made me get out and start looking for a job right away. So that's when I sort of got into insurance. And we technically started dating in 91. And the only reason Kim, if you were to ask her, said that she would start dating me is because she was graduating in 92 and needed a prom date. That was it. Isn't that the truth? Yep, that's it. But I won her over. So we started dating in 92. Technically, February of 92 is the official time when we started dating. And she won't know. She doesn't remember any of these dates or nothing. So, but that's the date I remember. I started getting into insurance, and I got my Rebo license. Started getting more and more involved in the church here. And I remember Laird saying to me, Steve, why don't you become an elder apprentice? And I'm like, what is an elder apprentice? He says, well, this is where you go on the board, but you don't actually have any authority. You can give your ideas, and it's a good way for you to learn. And that's the best, right? You're in these meetings, you can give your opinion, but you don't get in trouble with the church if something goes wrong, and you don't have any authority. So for me, that was a great thing. So Rob Reedy was in it. He was our youth pastor here at the time, and Dave Satropa was an elder apprentice, and Trevor Seath was an elder apprentice as well for a few years. And faith-wise, I was growing, being involved. But I remember waking up one morning, and there was just this little fear. You know, there's something that's inside that you just kind of wonder, you're afraid of something, but you don't know what it is. And over time, that got worse. And what a lot of people here probably don't know is that for about 2.5 years, I struggled with anxiety attacks. But it was only when I was by myself. When I'm in a crowd, when I was here at church, I was actually at that point an elder, and I was serving in the church. But at night, for about 2 years, I probably only got about 3 to 3.5, maybe 4 hours of sleep. I just couldn't fall asleep. And I was relying on these promises, right? Don't let your heart be troubled. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, present your request to God. Then the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds. Well, I prayed that, I swear, every night. I was reading the Bible more, and it just wasn't going away. And, you know, I was a bit too proud to even let my Kim knew, but my parents sort of, I think now would probably knew something was going on, but I don't think I even shared that with anybody else ever. It was just, the little pride comes in, right? I can't show that I've got these anxiety attacks. But it got to the point where I would have to go in the bathrooms at work, and I would literally sit for about 15, 20 minutes and just trying to have these. And I couldn't even, you can't pinpoint it, right? That's the weird thing about these anxiety attacks. You can't pinpoint what it is. Because if you could, then it would be gone. But it was just, you just had this overwhelming sense of fear, overwhelming sense of anxiety, and it cripples you when you're by yourself, right? I played sports. I was heavily involved here, and on Sundays it would be great. I hated going to bed. I literally hated going to bed, because then what do you do with your thoughts? And it wasn't until we had one speaker, I don't even remember who it was, but I was just talking about that when they have these fears, because they dealt with it too, just, you know what, yes, you pray to God to get them away, but you just start praying to God about other things, right? And then get help if things don't get better. So I remember after about a year and a half, or yeah, about 2 years, I really started to do that. I would say, I'm not going to go to bed and throughout you go to sleep. I am just going to go to bed and I'm going to pray. I'm just going to pray for everyone else that I can. And I prayed and I prayed. I would half fall asleep and then somehow I would wake up and I prayed. And I can't explain it. I don't know. But I remember I was on the bus, and I can still remember sitting on the bus and realizing, hey, I just took the subway and the bus home, and my heart wasn't pounding. I didn't have this fear. So then you start fearing, well, is something wrong now? Like, why am I not, because you get used to feeling, you kind of get used to your fears, right? And then the next day, the same kind of thing. I was like, wow, it's been 2 days that I haven't had that. And the sad part about it is, I stopped doing this praying thing at night. I don't do that anymore as much, right? Which is too bad, but I can't explain it, folks. I don't know what it is, but it just went away. Now, every once in a while, so that would have been 94 to 95, I still will get at times some, you can just sense it coming on, but I've learned how to deal with it more and try to stop it before it gets too far. But I learned the lesson of how much fear, the Bible talks a lot about not having fear, not having anxiety. It is crippling. If you know anybody that has it, it really can just, your mind and trying to just deal with things is very difficult. But I praise God so much that somehow he just answered that prayer. And what I learned is God's timing is always different than ours, right? I wanted it right now. I prayed exactly, that verse in Philippians. And I started questioning God of, I have prayed this probably every night for a year, and I'm still at times getting these anxiety attacks. But over time, God was able to help me. And over time, I became less of a fearful person. Not really. I can go away now at night and not be afraid, just so you know. Actually, I love it now. But I still, you know, it's weird how sometimes those anxieties can still come back. And I'm sorry I've gone on way too long here. I haven't even got to the biggest one I was going to get to, but, you know, Kim and I got married, and we had two wonderful children. Isn't that right, Alex? Yeah. And Sarah and Alex, and, you know, this is when your life, things are going well, right? And then I remember it was in December of 2003, if I remember correctly. Kim went for an ultrasound, and the doctor, she comes home and says, oh, this guy was so rude. You know, I don't know what was wrong with him. He made me walk around and did all these other things. And then she called and said, he wants to come back and meet tonight. Well, I just knew. It's almost like God just imparted me that. My brother had the same situation with their child about 5-6 years before that. And I just knew, I'm like, oh, something is up. And so essentially, the easy story is that the baby was 3 months old, but the brain wasn't formed. So there was almost no, they knew 100% that the baby would not survive. So it was a weird time because we had to make a decision. We had Christmas holidays, which in hindsight, right, just meaning how God works, we had booked way beforehand to go to my brothers out west who had the same situation 5 or 6 years earlier, and their baby died. So we find out on the 23rd, we fly to their house on the 24th, just after Christmas, yeah, and had a week with them, and lots of crying, lots of talking, but just how God worked that we were meeting with them who had the same situation. Then it's a weird thing. You got to come back, and we had to let them know by such a date whether we were going to abort or whether we were going to continue to go through the pregnancy. And it's a weird process, right? So at 11:58 p.m., you can abort. But at 12:01 a.m., it's too long. It's past a certain date, and it's considered a life, and you can't. So just that whole thing was really, really strange. But the hospital was great. Obviously, we decided to continue on the pregnancy. Easy for me to say, that's for sure. But and that was a time when we had so many immigrant Chinese people here. And I remember being in that small group, and it was such a learning experience because these people were not even Christians, and they were praying and praying and praying that God would heal this baby. We had tons of people praying about it. And I remember, you know, you just get that excitement. You sense, I knew in my heart, I'm like, you know what, God is a God of miracles. God is, he can do this. And even my brother, who doesn't believe in this, sometimes these huge miracle things, emailed me and said, you have 30 to 40 non-Christian Chinese people every week praying that God would show the power and would heal. And he's like, I think there's going to be a miracle here. And it was such a hard time. But I got to tell you, for me, and I'm not speaking for Kim, but it was the most enlightening time I think I have had. It was, you had this horrible situation, yet with God, reading his word, man, my walk with God was probably the best at that point. And unfortunately, it probably hasn't been back since. It was amazing. Right? But you know, God didn't answer our prayers, and Grace Angelique was born, and was stillborn, so she died just before we gave birth. And I remember how hard that was. But you know what? I mean, God, I mean, we were blessed again. We've had more kids. But it was so hard to just wonder, why didn't you answer our prayers? But you know what? Grace is in heaven. She skipped this horrible earth part in one sense, right? And the one thing that I love is that our faith, Kim and our faith, never wavered. right? That we trusted in God so much in that. And yet, the peace, and that's, the words are amazing. The peace that transcends all understanding, the peace that we can't understand, came over us. There were still hard times. And man, you know what? In that song, Hold Me Close, is that the one? Power of Your Love. Man, oh man. I swear they played that song more after that, after the baby was born. That was a song that Eddie Chu did a great video, and so kind of ruined the song for us. I love the song beforehand, and that's why he chose it. But so now, anytime you hear it, you know, for the first while after, it really, really affected, it would affect you, right? But you know, that's been, 10 years? No, how old is Timothy? 12, 13 years ago now. And yet, you still feel that pain at times. But man, God's faithfulness is there. We may not feel it now. We may not feel it a month from now. We may not feel it a year from now sometimes. But God's faithfulness is there. He was able to help us through it. And people of the church, I mean, we are a body of believers. We are a body. When one hurts, the other one hurts, right? When one rejoices, we all rejoice. And I just, you know what, we can't wait to get to heaven, and she's going to know more of heaven more than we are, and will show us around and stuff. But it has just been an amazing journey. And now it's a weird part for us, now that we've got our daughter going to university, and you know, the kids are getting older. I think our faith and trusting in God, so those of you who have got kids that age too, right? It's almost like you think you're going to get to the point where, okay, we're set. And then you find out, I'm finding out, no. Man, this trusting in God and relying on Him actually sometimes gets harder, because kids become adults. Kids start, you know, having their own opinions and disagreeing with their parents, which I have to learn. Kim is much better at that than I am. But, you know, that patience thing that Anastasia said about? Yeah. That's one that I got to really get going on. And if it makes sense in my mind, come on. Yeah, but no, they get their own minds, don't they? And just the faith that we have to have, the trust that we have to have in them. And God just recently, with the men's group and leading about, you know, living a Christian life of what does that mean? Oftentimes it is the simple things, isn't it? When I look back at my testimony, it's the people who spend time with me. Not that they gave me great wisdom, and not that they were super, you know, amazing spiritual people. They spent time with me. That was what important. When I was hurting, the people that would spend time with me. When I wanted to do things, right? We were a family. And I moved so often. I don't have, like some people, lifelong friends. You know, even the Montreal people, it's been a while. But I have, like, maybe 15-year-old friends or whatever. So I don't have these people from lifelong that I've known. But the body of Christ is what kept me, I think, from troubles. I wasn't these teens that went off and tried all these things and, you know, came back to the Lord. When my parents were, the reason my parents came back is because two out of the three kids walked away from God. They were getting letters from Grace Church saying, you better get home. Your two sons are, I mean, they got into everything. And that's why my parents ended up leaving, become missionaries and coming back home. I never wavered like that, and I really think one of the reasons is that I was always able to have the body of Christ, the church, to help me, to set an example, and to be involved. If I can just, even for the those that are, boy, I'm getting old. If I'm saying the young people, I feel like I'm young, but be involved. It's one of the things that kept me going to church. I didn't always like it. I didn't always enjoy doing what I had to do. Right? Yes, we should have joy as we serve Christ, but that's more our reward. God wants us to serve Him. So whether you're teaching Sunday school and you don't feel like it this week, or preaching, believe me, my dad was a pastor. I knew driving to church the Sundays that he didn't want to be there and didn't want to preach, but you still preached because you're blessing others. Your blessing is if you have the joy, right? The blessing that you get from it. So be involved. Try to find ways to serve God. In our men's group, we were talking about looking after, you know, the widows and the orphans, and just more about those are people in society that just almost have no rights and have, you know, it's just their life is just so hard. Find ways that you can serve God. Find ways that you can be involved. And God can change people. The Steve of 7, 11, 12, 14 would never have done this, especially going this long. Sorry. But you know what? That's God changes people. God gives people an ability, I think. My dad was shyer than I was, and he preached for 20 years. Let God use you. It's not always going to be the way that you think, but just start small, right? And just be involved. And in that way, you at least are keeping a connection. And just trust. I don't know how more to say. Just trust God. His timing is perfect. It's not ours. There are prayers that haven't been answered that I've been praying for years. But we know that he will answer it. And then even if he does answer it not the way that I want, then I have to learn to accept it. So that's it. So I was going to give my testimony for like 25, 30 minutes and then do a little devotional. I think I'll skip the devotional. How's that? Just want to thank you for the opportunity of giving my testimony. It's fun sometimes to do. And I'll just pray. And I'll ask the worship team to come up. And we can thank God that my voice survived. Barely.